We're back with the Danger Room's 24 Days of Christmas. This year, we're doing one episode per affiliation, each with its own special guest. We made an effort this year to bring in some guests from all over the world. Sit back, listen, and Merry Christmas. Hello, and welcome to another Christmas episode of the Danger Room. Today, we have Ben Lalka with me, and he is representing Winter Guard. Say hello, Ben.
Hello, and Slava Ukraina. It's Slav time, man. It's the best part of Christmas, is Slav.
I mean, do Slavs have any kind of affinity towards Christmas? I mean, more than anything else?
I mean, it's winter, it's cold. Come on, it writes itself. It writes itself.
That's fair. I almost feel like 3D printing a Santa hat to put on my Crimson Dynamo now.
Hey, if I can help with some good ideas like that. I mean, I've seen a lot of Ursas painted up as polar bears, so... Yeah, polar bear. So I'll tell you, the best modded version I saw of Ursa Major was the old school Coca-Cola polar bear. He had the scarf and a Coca-Cola bottle in his hand. It's awesome.
Oh, my Ursa is my only Winter Guard that's not painted. I need to do that now.
There you go. See, look.
Dude, they're going to be Christmas Guard now. I'm totally converting my Winter Guard to Christmas Guard.
Yeah, we did it. We did it, guys. We cracked the code.
All right. Ben's here representing Winter Guard. Ben, let's talk about what's in your Winter Guard list.
Yeah, so my Winter Guard list is affectionately called the Slav Time or a Slav Time list. I have Crimson Dynamo, Black Widow, Red Guardian, Winter Soldier Operative, Omega Red. That kind of gives me all of my Winter Guard. And then for my other characters that fill in the other half of this dual list is Beta Ray Bill, Scourge the Executioner, Thor, Hulk, and Shuri.
All right, let's keep it going. Tactics and Crises.
Yeah. So my Taxis cards, Odin's Blessing, Brace for Impact, Patch Up, Comrade's Keeper, Sovereign Strike, Eyes on the Prize, Brothers in Arms, Carbinium Synthesizer.
Carbonadium.
Kick them while they're... If you say it fast with confidence, no one can really tell the difference, right? kick them while they're down. And joint effort. And then my secure crisis are Gamma, Demons, Fisk, and the extracts are Hammers, Research, Montesi.
Okay. So this list has a dual affiliation with Asgard. What is it about Winter Guard that makes you want a dual affiliation?
Yeah. So I'm gonna say some stuff that might be difficult for people to hear. Okay. And listeners, just stay for the ride. Because I'll tell you what, I love Crimson Dynamo. I love him. He's great. But there are just some crisis scenarios that are just god-awful for him. For me, personally, I am convinced of almost every single D and B secures, Crimson does not see the field. Now, people will argue with me about that. But in my play experience, anytime I've tried to force Winter Guard on those specific secures, it's been a really bad time. I've also had a couple of interesting matchups with some other of those secures. I like Scoundrels with them, but there are many times where Crimson, if he gets stuck or repositioned onto one side of the Scoundrels, it tends to go poorly for him. There's just a lot of points, and he can't affect the entirety of the field like you want him to. This is why you play Crimson. And I'll just say it here. Crimson is almost god tier as a splash character on certain secures, especially when we're talking about E secures or researcher, because he's affecting the whole play field, right? But you get him outside of that, he as a character is really going to kind of tank in terms of his effectiveness of what his whole kit is trying to do. So this is why I wrestled for a long time. Mike has lovingly endured listening to me rant and rave, trying to figure out mono Winter Guard, and we're going to make this work, and just, you know, tears for ages, right? So once I came to terms that Winter Guard, if you're going to play them well, they need a splash affiliation that can help in some of those matchups. You play a D objective, D secure, against a Web Warrior player with Winter Guard, you're probably going to have a bad time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Crimson's like the most, one of the most splash characters in the game, specifically for Mappy. And in Wintergarden, you don't have a choice of just not playing him.
Correct. There's a difference when you're taking Crimson as a splash character to complement your team, keeping them alive and making sure that they do what they do even better. That's one thing. It's another thing completely when you're trying to build a squad around him where he's just not going to perform the way that you want in terms of these wider secures where these fast moving teams are going to thrive. And Crimson just like, can you slow down and get into a position where I can beam several of you, please? Maybe if the beam had some of these like Iron Man rules where if you, you know, do multiple damage, he can gain multiple power. But because it's just a single gainer, yeah, if you spike 5 damage into somebody, you're still only getting 1 power. So it really neuters his ability to keep up with this power gen. And if smart players are going to look at Crimson and recognize they don't want to feed you power, so they can just throw you away into nothingness, and then you're just a sad slav sitting on the sidelines. Alliteration's fun. I tried to make the whole thing illiterate, but I couldn't.
So you're playing, your affiliated models are Crimson, Black Widow, Red Guardian, Winter, Core 2 Bucky, and Omega Red. Two of these were only, or I guess I should say Winter Guard was only 4 models, and you're only playing half of the original 2, or original 4. Where's Darkstar and Ursa?
So Darkstar has been punted into outer space until she gets a rework. Darkstar is, at least in my opinion, again, one of those models that just works infinitely better anywhere outside of Winter Guard. I think she needs a pretty significant rework to make her fit a little bit more conducive to what Winter Guard is trying to do, while also trying to keep her as a balanced character, right? I think if they lowered some of her superpowers to 2 cost rather than 3 cost, I think she'd be too good for some of these other splashes. So I agree. And I don't know exactly how to fix Darkstar, but she's not going to be playing with my Winter Guard until she gets a rework. Ursa, I have gone back and forth. And I will say that Ursa was on this roster until Omega Red made the affiliation, which I was really excited about Omega Red making the affiliation. But you need a more tanky character who can absorb some of this damage. I love Ursa with his charge, auto stagger, throw, size 4. It's really awesome. But man, does he go down really quickly. 3 defense with no DR, no ability to heal himself or things like that. He's just going to go down like a bag of bricks. And you need someone that can be that frontline character with Winter Guard. And unfortunately, right now, Ursa is just not making the cut. Omega Red took his spot because he just fills that role. Almost everything that I want to do with Ursa, with displacement and being able to face tank some things, Omega Red just does a little bit more efficiently right now. So I think Ursa is really close to being an amazing character. Give that character 7 health on the front, 6 on the back with DR -1 to a minimum of 1. He's a perfect character.
Yeah, Ursa feels a little too squishy with his 3 defense and no damage reduction. The only thing he has that you could consider tanky is 7 health, which is Carnage has even more physical defense and feels just as weak.
Right. You're exactly. I think what we've seen is that sometimes we overvalue bigger health pools, but the way that dice work in MCP, you get exploded by some Hydra idiot goon, right? With your 3 defense, 7 health. Well, you rolled 0 successes and this Hydra goon just did 5 damage to you.
Yeah. I don't think we overvalue health. I think people don't think about damage reduction in terms of added health. Like, if I'm playing Luke Cage and my damage reduction happens twice before he dazes, like, I have 8 health. That's insane for a 3 threat. And two instances of damage reduction is not uncommon at all.
Yeah, that's probably a better way to name it. So, like I said, I think Ursa's on the cusp. And like I said, he was part of this until Omega Red made it into the affiliation. So for the same threat value, he could do relatively the same things that I wanted Ursa to do. So Omega Red was an easy fill in that slot.
Yeah, so let's talk about, I guess, when the errata happened, or was it Core 2? I can't quite remember. But Winter Guard gained 2 threat Black Widow and Omega Red and Core 2 Bucky.
Yeah, I believe it was on Core 2 Day. I think. Yeah, I think it was Core 2 Day. Yeah, I was so happy. I think I messaged you. I messaged a lot of folks. It was just like, guys, is Wintergarden a thing now? We're not bottom of the barrel? There's a big difference of going from 4 affiliated characters to 7, right? Now, I would have loved, at this point, I think I was messaging a couple other folks. I was hoping to get Bucky 2 and the new Black Widow as affiliate. Omega Red was out of the blue, right? That was complete left field for me. That was really cool. And I'll take 2-Threat Black Widow, because what 2-Threat Black Widow does is it allows you to play with some bigger characters, which is what Wintergarden wants to be doing. And so there's a really nice, it's not, all these other affiliations that don't have a 2-Threat affiliated often cry tears, right? And now we have one. So I'm really excited. It gives you a lot of flexibility in squad building with your roster.
I also love 2-Threat Black Widow, and she slots in perfectly in this roster because are a centralized like brawl anti-attrition team, and Widow is just great at running around and scoring points, which is exactly what they need.
Yeah, she is really awesome. She's been the star of a couple of games that I've been playing, so it's neat. Like I said, she's a great character. Yeah, I was ecstatic when we had an in-affiliation 2-Threat, so you can't be mad about that, right? You can't be mad.
So we actually glanced over Red Guardian. Not surprised to see him here. I think he's a staple of Wintergarden lists.
Yeah, I mean, I think, for at least for me, and maybe this is odd, I think Red Guardian is the best Wintergarden character, period. I would make the statement. My argument for this is when people give me a hard time about Crimson is better than Red Guardian. You take Red Guardian all the time. You can't take Crimson in every crisis, but you can. There is a valid argument to take Red Guardian in every single crisis in this game. He just contributes. He can do things. He can interact with the board state with his pushes, his throws. Comrade's Keeper is just an amazing card that's stapled to him, right? So there's a way where Red Guardian is actively available in every crisis matchup where Crimson is just not. So it's on that basis alone why I would name that Red Guardian is the best Wintergarden character in our roster currently.
Yeah, Red Guardian's great. Comrade's Keeper is great. It's no-brainer to me. And then the last one we got here is Core 2 Bucky Operative. So why is he here? What do you like about him?
Well, to be honest, Mike, he is close to the chopping block. He's close to the chopping block. I like new Bucky mainly because of this hit-and-run ability to also interact with characters at range 5. Suppressive is an amazing ability to get off, which is making characters lose power. But the main reason why I take Bucky in this list is for Concussion Grenade. Concussion Grenade is silly good. Being able to, I don't know, listeners or Mike yourself, how many stupid times I have to run or roll a Crimson Dynamo beam. I'm beaming 4 characters and get one freaking wild. And it is just the most infuriating thing in the whole world. With Concussion Grenade, all you need to do is get that one wild one time on the same amount of dice, and you've shocked upwards to 3 characters, hopefully, because you're shocking the character that you've targeted, as well as every enemy character within 2, which is just nuts to be able to affect the field that way. The way that I'm trying to run this Wintergarden affiliation is very status conditioned. I want to put as many status conditions on you as possible. Obviously, that's why Kick'em is here, but being able to throw all of these status conditions, stun, shocked, incinerate, poison, right? All of these, stagger with Thor, right? All of these abilities to do this is just an amazing, amazing thing for this affiliation. That's why I play demons, right? So you get that incinerate. You're just stacking all of these conditions where I, as a Wintergarden player, can mitigate some of those statuses that an enemy player is trying to put on me. I bet you if I put 4 status conditions on you, I'm going to neuter one of your characters, right? So I really like Bucky for that instance. Like I said, Concussion Grenade is just really good. He does tamper off a little bit compared to the other one in terms of damage, right? The rapid fire 4 dice before was nuts. A 5 die at range 5 is is a little bit rough. There's a couple times where Killbox comes into account. But the other strong thing that people forget is this Bucky has stealth. So I can interact with you at range 5, and you have to be within range 3 to shoot me back.
He feels a lot like 4-threat Hawkeye.
Yes, that's a really neat way to put that, yeah.
Yeah, but so we talked a little bit about how Bucky could be on the chopping block. I had suggested Hela. I've been super high on Hela lately, and I think she's probably a staple in Asgard at this point. Have you given her any games?
Yeah, so I've not given her any games yet. I know you and I have talked about this off the cast, and as we walk through it, I'm like, oh, wow, I guess I had just not really looked at Hela after her rework and realized some of her potential that she can do while in Asgard, and also trying to look at some of the benefits of doing it while also playing Winterguard. So this list is, I'm taking this list to Everwinter with the caveat that I've taken this week off for vacation. So I'm going to jam in a lot of games before we leave to also throw in an opportunity to get Hela in there. So this list might change with just swapping out Winter Soldier for Hela. So Mike, you sold me on it. As we were talking about it, I'm like, wow, this is really exciting.
Yeah, also, if you're worried about spread scenarios, she's amazing on spread out stuff because she can actually pivot between map B flanks. This move Death's Embrace, and that's extremely far.
Well, yeah, and just having that online every turn, right, while you're on your healthy side is actually a pretty significant deal. So and that was what you pointed out to me, which was a big selling point, was just how mobile she is. So
next up, we have an Asgard duel here. And it consists of Scourge, Thor, and Bill. Now, are you thinking about playing Asgard on spread out things, obviously? And that's probably the case. And if so, what do you like about Asgard on spread out scenarios?
Yeah, so I really liked realizing that many of the spread out scenarios are push to flips, right? So that was trying to process who's an affiliation that can help me do this while also trying to put on conditions. And I really like the aesthetic of just survivability, right? We're still in the very slap-happy meta, and so being able to survive is always a good thing. And I like Asgard a whole bunch on riots. One of the really annoying thing for your opponent is to go figure heal twice every time you activate. I just heal twice, so get wrecked. So I really like that. So it was trying. My thought process when I was building this, I want to be more Winter Guard focused. That's my intent with this roster. But as I was thinking of the duel, what is the lowest value or the least minimum characters that I need that aren't going to eat up a whole bunch of tactic slots because I need some to make Winter Guard work and that can give me a nice threat value to work with three models? Thor, Scourge, Beta is 12 points, 12 threat. And that allows me to work in almost every other character that I want to that can still effectively do what I need them to do. I also took Brother in Arms in this case because Thor and Bill being close to each other, preventing throws and pushes is actually a pretty significant deal. So obviously your leader is a have to. Bill is just an auto include in many rosters just in general, right, for what he's doing. So that third spot was, all right, what part of Asgard do I want to really round out this affiliation or of what I'm trying to do? And the selling point for me, obviously, I wanted a three threat, but I needed some protection. And Scourge, with his too dangerous to ignore, was the big selling point, right? His reverse bodyguard is just amazing. That has come into account on a lot of my games. Having folks work around that and Odin's blessing is no small matter, right? So I really enjoy Scourge and what he's doing. He's also putting out bleeds, right? So we're still pretty condition heavy with this roster, even when we play with Asgard.
Yeah, I like Scourge a lot. I've lost games to Scourge before because I forgot he has bodyguard or taunt rather. I suspect when the new Asgard models come out and they get people excited to play Asgard again, that people will discover Scourge being a pretty sweet three threat.
That's the other thing. So I'm a big Thor fan. I love Thor. I was really sad when first the Thor came out and just was so swingy, right? Live or Die by Fat Thor. And I can tell you, there's a couple of things when we go into some of the combos or the tactics of this whole roster of what I'm trying to do. But new Thor is so freaking good. I love him. He's still a little swingy, but this is why I bring Shuri to dice fix a little bit. But this new Thor is amazing. I'm so stoked for the new models. And the other thing that I know I've shown you, Mike, is we were able to print a Perun model that I proxy in for when I'm playing with Winter Guard as my leadership. So Perun is the Slavic god of thunder, and it is an amazing model, and he's really cool. And Alyssa, my wife, did an amazing job painting him up. So I think I've showed you that model, a couple other folks. So
yes, it's very cool.
Yeah. So I have two Thors with me when I travel with this roster. I've got Thor when I either I'm on stream and I can't have a 3D model, or when I run Asgard, I run the typical one. But when I'm running Thor with the Winter Guard squad, I use my Perun model.
Yep. I love it. We'll probably get Perun someday, I expect.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, my hopes and dreams is that Perun is just a better Thor, and that would make me, as a Slavic man, a really happy boy. I don't know, I do want to throw in this, the importance of, I don't know if we skipped over or not, forgive me. Omega Red is so good right now, especially in this roster. Being able to pull people medium is not a small deal. People forget that it's not a small pull that he or push, but he pushes toward himself, and it's at range 4.
he's identical to Venom.
Yes, this is a huge deal, right? I was playing a game against Sooners defenders where he brought Luke Cage and Red Guardian with a lot of these bodyguard shenanigans, intersecting different bodyguard shenanigans, and what if I just had a character that repositioned everybody a significant amount, right? Omega Red is amazing. And what's also really clutch is those teams that really struggle to generate power don't love to be poisoned. Poison's not a great condition in terms of all the rest of them, but when you can get it off and make it meaningful, it's pretty funny to watch somebody across the board go, oh, so my character doesn't get any power this turn. Nope. No, they do not. Joke's on you.
Yep. Yeah, if you're able to keep models on low power and poison them, that's when poison really shines. It's tough, though.
It is. And the nice thing that you benefit from is most people don't see Omega Red, so they forget if they end their turn within two, you've poisoned yourself, right? When I end my turn within two of you, I've poisoned you, right? So there's some really nice stuff. You can pull people. Oh, I think I'm safe. Oh, I pull you into being poisoned. So there's some really neat synergies that you can do with Omega Red. And I can't say enough, that DR, like we were just talking about, damage reduction is just amazing in this game. So here's a character that has damage reduction and has the ability to heal himself, right? The drain life on his builder is pretty significant. All you got to do is push one damage and he heals himself. So this is a character that can very quickly just never die.
Has that been your experience with Omega? Is he just tanks?
Oh, yeah, it's nuts. My goal with Omega Red is to put an extract on him as quick as possible and say, what are you going to do, hit me? Right? So you're hitting him, which is a character that you really don't want to be hitting, if we're going to be completely honest. Right? You don't want to feed him power so that he can pull, interact with the board too much. He's not going to go down a whole bunch. 6 health with DR on his front side isn't insignificant, right? He's got 6 health on both sides, but it's the 3 dice that kind of hurts him. But this is where Crimson can come in pretty significantly, making your opponent reroll 2 dice. I'll tell you what happened actually in that same game with our buddy Sooner and a couple other folks. Double walk Omega Red, grab that single extract in the middle, whatever it may be, and folks are trying to slap him to death and do all of these things. Well, they find out they can't kill him with 2-3 attacks on turn 1. Top of turn 2, you're able to reposition, patch him up, and now you're starting over. So, and that's a great way to make people upset because now they're out of position. Omega Red's back to full health and you've given him a whole bunch of power to reposition people, do some other things that he wants to do. Him playing Sovereign Strike is just also another amazing thing. He's another character that can play this this great card. So Omega Red doesn't get enough love. I hope that with Winter Guard being seen a little bit more, people can see that Omega Red's not too bad. So I like him a whole bunch.
I think Pagani has said on stream that he loves Omega Red. I'm sure it breaks his heart that people don't play Omega Red as much as he probably hopes they would. So this is probably a move in that direction.
Yeah, I'm trying for Pagani. I like Pagani. We've talked a couple times. So, I mean, he's a cool guy. And yeah, I didn't know that he liked Omega Red. So that makes me happy. I'm trying to do him proud.
Yeah, if my memory serves me correctly, he said he loves Omega Red.
The model's awesome. And like I said, Alyssa did just an amazing job with painting Omega Red too. So yeah, it's really neat to see him just on the field some more.
All right, let's talk about these last two that we got here. So Shuri, you mentioned a little bit offering rerolls for Thor and whoever else might need them. Shuri's also great on like the narrows, like the gunline-y stuff. So it's not too surprising that she's here.
Yeah, dice fixing is obviously in faction for both Winter Guard and Asgard. They just don't have it, right? Bill has it with his Summon the Storm ability into flyers, but
that's not quite true. Heimdall has rerolls.
Oh, forgive me. Freaking Heimdall. Yeah, my bad. My bad. Yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad. But who plays Heimdall? Anyway, Shuri.
Real quick, I was considering playing Heimdall with Dormammu, and that might be a discussion on the Dormammu episode, so stay tuned.
I can tell you firsthand experience at Everwinter last year. The guy who came in second place at Everwinter last year was running Dormammu and had Heimdall. And it was nuts. So yeah, look forward to that episode. That's going to be an awesome episode. But yeah, so Shuri's here for some dice fixing. I've also found that she's just amazing on those D secures, right? Those wide objectives. Again, like you said, pushing people off of points is still really good. This affiliation, despite my propensity to love to slap people, as many of those who know me know, I love slapping people. This roster is not going to pour out a whole lot of damage. That's not really its intent. I'm going to put conditions on you and hope to control you in a different way that's not webs or some of these other control, like Hellfire, like Curtis's Hellfire, right? Which is a pretty control-focused affiliation. This team is still trying to do relatively the same thing, but just a little bit differently, right? With conditions and the occasional push from Red Guardian, push from Omega Red and Shuri and things like that, and a couple throws from other characters.
Makes sense. And then lastly, we got Hulk, original Hulk. I would imagine Hulk is just way more accessible to put on the table now with Widow being affiliated.
Yeah, I mean, go figure. Hulk is still just the best. One of the best characters of the game, if not the best character in the game. I know people love talking about CGR as the best character, but I think Hulk is still very much one of the best characters in the game. And yeah, go figure when your core threat can be 9 threat with Crimson, Red Guardian, and Black Widow, it's a lot easier to fit in a Hulk. And Hulk really is great with a lot of these crises that we're trying to run. So go figure, move, throw is still really good in this game.
Yeah, and the Winter Guard leadership has always lended itself to the big high threat models because one of the best ways to control them is status conditions, and Winter Guard just stops all that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. There was a time where I was running Hulk Malekith in this roster, but Malekith, in my opinion, got nerfed a little too much to make it worth it for 7 threat for Winter Guard because, again, the rest of your squad have to pull their weight to counteract the 7. And I don't think Winter Guard as a whole have that ability. So where Hulk is exactly doing what you want to do with control, he's a threat cheaper than Malekith. So you're really in a happy place with 6 threat. And it still allows you often to take another character. So you can still easily go 5 wide, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, Hulk's probably slightly undercosted. I think if he was 7 threat, people would still play him.
Yeah. We don't have to go down that rabbit hole too much, but I think Hulk, if OG Hulk is 7 threat and his throw is 3 cost, just like Immortal Hulk, I think the game would be in a much cooler place. But
yeah, I think people would still play him is the crazy part.
I think so too, but I think he would make it a lot more endurable as the opponent looking across the field. But this isn't a Hulk episode, even though Winter Guard love Hulk. So.
But yeah, no, I do like the addition of Hulk here. I think it makes a lot of sense. Because if it's not him, it's Cosmic Ghost Rider. But talking about Cosmic's exhausting. So And I don't suspect that he will survive in his current state for much longer.
The Lord hopes so, right? The other thing, I want my big kaiju character to score objectives, right? I want to threaten scoring out really fast. Even though I'm playing slow objectives, you can still score enough or get enough of that lead with slow objectives. They can only score so much to come back, right? So if I'm pretty consistently getting three or four points ahead, that's all you need sometimes, right? And so Hulk is a really great way to do that. And with Shuri there, often the five wide that I can run is Crimson, Black Widow, Red Guardian, Hulk, and Shuri. Shuri makes Hulk a little bit more survivable with defensive rerolls. And now I've got three characters that are going to push you off of points and throw you off of points with Hulk, right? So your Red Guardian is pushing characters, Shuri is pushing characters, and now Hulk is pushing and throwing your characters. So there's a lot of control with that, and I've loved it.
Yeah, it sounds really strong, especially if you're on a scenario where Crimson can shine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's the core 10. Like I said, I don't play as Asgard as much, except really that's just those wide objectives. But Winter Guard is gotten a little bit better. And if I'm going to be completely honest, this is not the strongest roster in the world. There are rosters who maybe do this a little bit better, but I really appreciate the control aspect with the copious amount of status conditions that you can put on people, which is really fun. Forcing people to make decisions if they need to shake is a win for you. Anytime a character is shaking conditions, you're winning, right? So don't forget that as you're pouring on all of these shocks, these stuns, bleeds, poisons, right? All of this stuff. And then God forbid, if you're forcing people to shake and then you're pushing them out of position, it's really just golden for you.
I love it. So moving on to some tactics cards, we have one affiliated card here, Sovereign Strike. Sovereign Strike's really great. I think people know this by now, but I'm sure you agree with me.
The construction building. I think it's a Fisk construction building, and that
the trailer.
Yeah, the little trailer, right? That thing is huge, right? And I love when people just bunker up next to it, and I'm just giggling like a schoolgirl, right? Just going like, man, you're gonna have a really bad day in about 0.2 seconds because I'm just going to get a free 6 to 8 damage. So the two funniest ones are when you blow that up or people have huddled around like a little barrel, little size one barrel, right? And you blow up the barrel. Yep. And everybody takes 2 damage around. I love it. I just giggle. It's so funny because again, this is unexpected damage, right? I don't need to roll any dice, so auto damage is just pretty clutch. What's been nice with all of these pushes and control is I can also actively participate in positioning my characters into a place where I can Sovereign Strike them. So I'm setting up beams with Sovereign Strike. It's just chef's kiss, man. I think not enough Winter Guard players are playing Sovereign Strike in a way that is trying to actively utilize it to its full. I see people hot fire Sovereign Strike, I mean, just right off the rip, right? Turn 2, they can get 3 power on Red Guardian and they just Sovereign Strike and do 2 or 4 damage or something that just hit 2 characters. But I've experienced that bottom of 2, top of 3, after some pushes and reorienting some things a little bit, you can set yourself up pretty easily. I have not fired off a Sovereign Strike in the last maybe 4 or 5 games that hasn't hit 3 to 4 characters every time. That's how you need to play it.
Sovereign Strike is great if you like make a couple attacks, leave a character on 1 or 2, you can either just insta-kill them or decide if you want to maybe leave them up for next round and then kill them then. Important to note is that Sovereign Strike does friendly fire.
That's the not cash money part of it. It does friendly fire. But, you know, Omega Red doesn't mind sometimes. He's fine.
And then we talked about Comrade's Keeper. It's just like the Heroes for Hire version for Red Guardian. It has a couple differences, like you place range 2, Red Guardian pays for it. And I think he has to take damage to throw them.
He's got to take a damage. Yeah. So there are some really weird, I've had some really weird interactions with Comrade's Keeper. I've had people re-roll their successes to get out of dealing a damage, which is also fine.
He also has to not die, if I recall correctly, right?
Correct. Yeah, if you die. So it gets really hard to play it on his front side, if I'm going to be completely honest, because he's got 5 health. He usually doesn't have enough power to Comrade's Keeper and do his Count Blanks ability. And that's also like this weird, if I count blanks, I'm going to block too much and not take damage. So Comrade's Keeper is difficult to play in terms of trying to fire it off in the best time. But yeah, I mean, when you do, it's place yourself range 2 and throw characters. It's pretty awesome.
Yep. And then we also talked about Brothers in Arms slightly, right? That's the Thorn build team up card. Refresh my memory. This card gives them extra energy dice. Extra dice on energy attacks?
Yeah, so it gives extra energy dice, which is hilarious for the other thing that we'll talk about. So it gives extra energy dice, and it also prevents Bill and Thor from being advanced, thrown, or placed. So they are susceptible to being pushed, which is the most common form of displacement, which is annoying. But you're not playing, at least in my experience, you're not playing Brothers in Arms for that part of the card. However, they have to be within 2. So there is some cheekiness with Brothers in Arms to make sure that you get it off, because they have to be within 2 to gain the benefit of the card, right? So it's cheeky, but I'll just go ahead. It's being able to Brothers in Arms and joint effort into a God of Thunder is the funniest and most amazing thing in this game. So it's a lot of dice and everything dies. You will just smote everything. So God of Thunder being 4 power is a significant thing, right? So Brothers in Arms only costs 1 power. God of Thunder is 4. And joint effort, which you can play with God of Thunder because it's an area attack, is 3, right? So that's 8 power, which Thor can pretty easily get to by turn 3. And the way that the current ruling of joint effort is, everything dies because you gain joint effort on the effects of beams and area attacks. So for the entirety of the attack, yeah. So imagine, if you will, with me, go into a theoretical world, if you will, where your 7 die attack is now suddenly a 10 die attack hitting everyone within range 2. Oh, and if you have friends that are within those range 2 of those characters, you're getting upwards of another 2 to 4 die. So now you're talking about going from a 10 die from originally 7. So you go to 7 to 10 and then potentially up to like 14 dice. It's pretty awesome. So it's fun. It's a little tricky to pull off, but it's very possible. You don't really have to jump through. The trick is the positioning, not necessarily getting the power on Thor, right? That's the easiest part to do.
I forgot about this one, but Winter Rush is omitted here. What are your opinions on Winter Rush?
Ooh, you ask hard questions there, Mike. I, in theory, love Winter Rush, and Winter Rush has only gotten better with obviously the inclusion of more Winter Guard characters, right? However, I've just found that some of our Winter Guard characters are just dying too quickly to get them in positions where 6 power is enough to get through. So like this really helps Ursa out, right? Getting Ursa or like Omega Red, even Crimson back into positions. And Winter Rush has come in and out of this roster, if I'm going to be completely honest. It's come in and out. But I've just experienced that good players, if I'm triggering off Winter Rush multiple times, is just going to nuke down some of those characters because the damage reduction isn't there, so they can't stay live. Because it's anybody takes damage, and then a Winter Guard character can move, right? Well, if all of my Winter Guard characters are dead, I've paid 6 threat between them for nothing. And so I want to disincentivize my opponent to attacking Winter Guard characters But right now, Red Guardian is still pretty easy to knock down. Winter Soldier is like not that difficult to knock down. The two people that people don't want to hit is Crimson Domino and Omega Red. I would play Winter Rush more regularly if I had a third Winter Guard character that I can guarantee to say, I've got three Winter Guard characters who are going to constantly be moving off of this. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's where I'm at with the card. I've played it a bunch since this additional adding more characters, and I've enjoyed it, but it just doesn't do enough, in my opinion.
That was my impression of it. It makes you like really vulnerable to control too. Like if your opponent can win without attacking you, then the card is worthless.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, one of those games where I tried it was against Curtis's Hellfire, and I was like, oh, I'm going to play Winter Rush, and oh, you didn't attack me once this round. That's cool. That's six power. Well used. There's more characters that can have a bigger survival rate. The other time I played it, they were able to just nuke down my Winter Guard characters. So, all right, cool. I've got three Winter Guard characters. One's Black Widow, who doesn't really want to be moving toward people, right? per se. And so then I'm Red Guardian goes down quick. And yeah, it was not a great experience. I think it was after that game that I took that out and actually added the synthesizer card for Omega Red.
Yeah, so let's talk about that card. I was going to ask why you think that card should be here. I mean, it seems awkward to me because this card removes status conditions off Omega Red, but the leadership already does that.
Oh, man. Let me tell you a story about Omega Red on Demons Downtown. Demons Downtown, where he's getting attacked, right? Because people want to take down this character that has an incinerate on him. And they're putting on conditions on him. Oh, he was hexed, rooted, incinerated, all of these things. The Winter Guard ability to remove the most impactful condition is like a pretty big deal. It is important to note, though, that is a May ability. And so with the synthesizer, at the start of anybody's turn on your team, start your turn, Omega Red can just play this card. It doesn't even have to be during his turn, right? And all of a sudden, the six health character that had four conditions on it has removed every single condition, has healed that many health, and has gained that much power to now reposition people. I will tell you, I only bring this card out, or I should say, because it's not an auto include by any means. You play this card when your opponent has, you have a feeling your opponent is going to have a character that has a condition on every single one of their characters in the squad. Okay. And then this card only gets brought out in Demons, on Demons Downtown. So there's a very specific window where I play it, but I've done it four or five times now with Omega Red. And every time it is, I mean, like he's on one health, two health, the MCP special, right? Leave him on one, right? Well, joke's on you. Start over now. And you're not even wasting patch up.
Yeah, it's pretty wild that he basically just gets fully restored if he has like three or four conditions on him.
It's not. And people, you know, again, forgive me, but sometimes folks just don't pay attention to that. Oh, this is an unknown card because, again, who plays Omega Red, right? And then who plays this card? So being able to sneak this out and to recognize, it's not really a gotcha moment, but people, when you're weighing this card, like, oh, well, putting out conditions is an actively good thing, so you're just going to go ahead and do that. And if you leave Omega Red on one or two health, all of a sudden, he's going to remove all of those conditions, heal all that damage, and then gain power for that. That's the big part of it, too, is now he's gained power where people forget the ensnare ability for Omega Red is he can keep doing this, right? He can keep pulling people range four medium as long as he has power to do it, right? So I have single-handedly with Omega Red pulled an entire team before, five characters, right? Here's 10 power. I don't care. I've now repositioned your entire team. So Thanos who, right? I've got Omega Red, the new Thanos. You heard it here. Danger Room. There we go. But it is a really amazing thing for Omega Red to do. Now, again, it's very niche in that I only think about it when we're playing Demons. And then I have to really seriously look across the table and go, how many conditions can my opponent put out? Do I anticipate Omega Red having upwards to three to four conditions on him? Well, I can guarantee that he's going to have incinerate on him because I'm going to sit his you know, big juicy butt right on it, right? And I want my opponent to attack me and do all of those things. So it's a pretty nice thing that is niche, but when you can get it to go off, it's a pretty neat ability.
Very cool. We also talked a little bit about joint effort with Brothers in Arms and AoE.
That card's dumb.
Yeah, joint effort's extremely good. Also, it's pretty sweet with Dynamo.
Yeah, I have a lot of characters on this roster. Even Hulk. Hulk has the ability to play joint effort with his Thunderclap, right? So there's a lot of characters on my squad that want to be close to you, and I have access to beams. So, yeah, Crimson doing joint effort is just amazing. Yeah, it's all actively good. I will tell you that I tend to reserve Crimson very last for joint effort because obviously you want power for Crimson to do his forced rerolls.
Right. He also doesn't build more power for doing more damage.
So he's usually the last. Looks at it's usually a Thor, a Hulk, who I'm trying to get it off with.
And then we've got kick them while they're down. Not surprised here with the amount of status conditions you're trying to put out. It helps your consistency.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, except we don't have dice fixing, right? So anything to be able to help that out. Yep.
And then Eyes on the Prize, just the standard Beta Ray Bill 2023 meta nonsense.
Yeah, that's staple to his card, right?
And then Odin's Blessing is a no-brainer for Asgard. It's a staple card. Have you thought about playing Doom Prophecy at all?
Yes. So Doom Prophecy was also a part of this roster for a little while. I think I had it before I had Kick'em. So I was Doom Prophecy in there. Let me just confess this. I am too smooth brain to figure out the prime time to play Doom Prophecy. I hope that the next person you have on here to talk about Asgard can give you good advice of when to play Doom Prophecy. I cannot. I can't do that. Every time I play Doom Prophecy with the surely they're not going to do this thing where the Doom Prophecy turn, like I'll have Thor play Doom Prophecy in a bodyguard bubble, Shuri, all this stuff, right? Like I'm fine. I'm safe. You can't do all this damage. Oh, dead. Never mind. So yeah, it is too frustrating for me to figure it out. I just gave up trying to figure it out and realized that there are just other cards that I can smooth brain my way into playing.
And then for restricted cards, we got Brace, which is standard restricted card of forever, and Patch Up. I think this makes sense when you have a lot of chunky, durable models and you want to grind people.
Yeah, I went back and forth with Sacrifice. There was some pretty early turns when I did have Sacrifice where Omega Red goes up, Crimson will follow up, and so you attack Omega Red. I sacrifice into Crimson with the hopes that you're going to do a little bit of damage so that I can get the forced rerolls online and all this stuff. I've just found that there's too many wild, crazy instances where my DR1 characters are still dying too fast on a sacrifice play that I'd rather just have patch up. It's just a little bit easier for me to work around.
Makes sense. And then for secures, we have Gamma Demons and Mare Fisk. All three of these, I think, like Crimson Dynamo shines on these scenarios, which is probably why they're here, right?
Yeah, the focus is, again, I want to be playing Winter Guard as much as possible. And Demons and Fisk are really amazing scenarios for Winter Guard. Good players recognize that getting stunned and having incinerate on you are actually bad, right? Having incinerated teams be beamed into is increasing my likelihood of getting some good dice and taking you out. So you'll often find people not standing on the demon, especially that middle demon on round one and two often. And I can sit on there all I want, right? Especially if I have prio, recognizing that I can just go with that character and remove the incinerate condition and I'm fine. And there's zero negative unless you're running into like a bill or something like that where you got to work around those incinerate immune characters. So I've found Demon and Fisk to just be amazing scenarios for me. The threat values are fine. 19 and 16 are both okay for me. I'll be honest, Gamma in research, I love the shape. The threat value is a little scary. Winter Guard 15 is not terrible, but there are some really scary 15s out there. And it's scary. My Winter Guard 15 it's Crimson, Black Widow, Guardian, and Hulk. There are times where I've run, so the other 15 that I've run and won a couple games with was Crimson, Omega, Red Guardian, Bill. That was pretty interesting. So there's three characters with DR that all have, and I have three of my four characters who are able to reposition you. That's a pretty big deal.
I mean, I like both those options. I mean, choosing between Hulk or Bill is pretty good.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a nice thing. Again, the addition to Omega Red being a part of Winter Guard was a big deal. So that used to be Ursa, and Ursa doesn't reposition enough, especially in early rounds, right? With a lucky single move, slap somebody at range three because they've got a little too close, reposition another person who's at range four. On turn one is actively pretty darn good.
Yeah, Mega Red can also just pull people into the Gamma Wastes, so they just take auto damage.
It's a really neat, both of those squads within the roster, I've had some pretty decent success with. The nice thing about Black Widow, she could just hang out in the back. That allows Crimson to play a little bit more aggressively. I think too many Winter Guard players are still playing Crimson in the back line, right? Because of that range four. I think what you'll notice, your most notice words, don't worry, I talk for a living, is that the best place for Crimson to live is right in the thick of it. It's where he wants to live.
Yeah, you need him to be getting value out of Disruption Field.
100%. Yes, he's size three and people can throw him into your guys. You just have to live with that. That's just a fact that we live with, right? But it's better to endure that rather than not getting your Disruption Field off.
And then for the extracts, we had Hammers, Researcher, and Montesi Formula. Researcher and Montesi are both map E. I'm not super surprised to see those. Hammers is probably because you can just put a hammer on Dynamo or something.
Yeah. Six dice beams are just emphatically better than five dice beams. So in my experience, the other extracts were either score too fast, would put me out of position, or dealing some extra damage on me that I can't consistently deal with. The other potential was like Deadly Legacy Virus instead of Hammers, but I'm not playing Mission Objective. And there's a feel bad when you're playing Legacy Virus without Mission Objective, right? So that was the one that I went back and forth with Hammers. And of course, Bill being able to eye on the prize, go get that move back. So there's still like a safe play, right? So we can maintain parity on turn one. And then it's really about my positioning going into round two. And that allows me to beat people based on my positioning without suffering on round one, where some of these extracts scroll. I mean, how many times have we been screwed over by scrolls, right? You lose a game because you failed that opening scroll roll, right? And you're just like, whoops, I guess I'm dead. Spider infected. Again, Crimson's leadership of not being pushed worked on some of those things. Yeah, man, maybe I'd play those. Maybe I would, but they don't. So being repositioned by extracts is really bad by Winter Guard standards, right? There is an argument for paranoia, but that just scores too quick.
I think it's way too fast, and everything's on the center, which you don't love either.
Yep, I don't super love that. And one of my characters is going to take some unnecessary damage that I just can't deal with, right? You just got to deal with it. So there was some conversation of alien ship as well, too. But at the same time, Crimson wants to be holding on to a lot of power at the end of a turn. If Crimson gets a hold of this, I'm going to have a nuclear bomb with Crimson. That doesn't seem good. Those are just, I've tried most of them. I just hard passed on Senators, right? Senators are just bad, right? Senators is another one where you potentially take Asgard instead of Winter Guard because the Winter Guard team wants to huddle up, right? And Senators just says that's probably not going to happen. Right. One of the weak points of this roster is we have no extract steals, right? So you're going to play against some teams into Senators that might have extract steals or the Mystique Senator shenanigans that you can do, right? This team is going to struggle a little bit with those scenarios. So pro tip, win prio, choose your extracts if you see Senators. But yeah, that's one of the weaknesses of this roster.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. So I guess, what are the weaknesses? What are the bad matchups? I mean, I think you glanced over Webbs a little bit earlier.
Yeah, Webbs is brutal. So I will tell you, Webbs is brutal mainly because Webbs can catch you off guard where your anti-push part of your leadership, which only statistically works, 34, 35% of the time based on the die faces, there's the condition that you have to be contesting a secure. And sometimes the way that you've positioned Crimson or some of these other characters, they can just pull you right off. And man, if Crimson gets out of position, it's brutal, right? It is absolutely brutal. Their ability to just rotate really fast is rough. So those are pretty difficult matchups for you to go in. This is why you often think about switching into Asgard with this roster, because it gives you a little bit more mobility to move around. Thor has some ability to keep up a little bit. The other teams that this team really struggles with tends to be those control teams like that Hellfire control list, right? That's going to do that. I've actually experienced that this team isn't terrible into Guardians, at least in my experience. I've not found too much trouble with that. I know that's like the big bad. Shield has been a hit or miss with this roster. The ability for them to continually work outside of disruption field can be pretty annoying. And the ability to avoid the counter slap with eyes is really difficult for this team to work out. Other rosters can bait into eyes of, hey, either burn this right now or I'm just going to punish you, right? Winter Guard struggles with some of the ability to do that. That's why I actually like Omega Red, is you can play it. You can play eyes. If you play it, I can just pull you right back, right? So there's some nice counter into that. But yeah, we really struggle into them as well, pretty consistently, at least in my experience. Those teams with extra steals are rough. I've not struggled too much against Inhumans or like Wakanda or anything like that. Midnight Suns, surprisingly, Black Cat just being affiliated into Midnight Suns and Webs has been brutal. Spider-Woman is rough. I've not experienced too much struggle into X-Men. Like I said, it really hits or miss. There's not a lot of teams that I go in besides Webs that I just go, I think I just lose.
You should add Agent Venom.
Agent Venom is nice to just tell them to cut that out, right? Just like, hey, what if you just stop that? But there have been a couple of like more niche rosters. I shouldn't say niche rosters. Some of those like hyper scenario, we want to score really fast. So like Mystique Brotherhood on Senators, that has been very difficult. I'm not running into a lot of Senators, period, besides that Mystique Senators, but that's been pretty rough. Actually had a pretty interesting game against New Skull, and that wasn't too bad. So it's interesting with kind of where this team is right now and just the state of the game. But I will tell you, this roster has really struggled with Webs. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just looking through my list of my most losses. The other one was Sam. Yeah. Sam hates me. I just hate freaking Sam. The Sam at NashCon, just winning NashCon. Anyways, but yeah, Sam just being able to reposition folks that you've worked hard and you get a clutch days to get control of a secure, and you've been able to control somebody off of another point with like Omega Red, for example. Well, Sam just moves that person right back on there and doesn't trigger actually Omega Red's poison ability. It was just a way to round it because it's not their turn. It's nutty how some of those interactions work.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so you try to keep that. Oh, if you move on this point, well, he waits for Sam to trigger his thing. Sam and Webs, I usually just have a kind of a minor meltdown when I see across the table. It's just like, oh, man, this is going to be rough. It is nice. The all webbed up turn against this roster generally isn't as bad, because you can remove some of that stuff. But, you know, my luck, I just play against really good web players. When they play it, the game's usually over anyways. And the all webbed up turn is just to secure that, right? So they only really need one or two things to happen. And if they get it with like a prio turn or something like that, yeah, it's usually just over. So yeah, like I said, nothing else is really that scary that I look across the table and go, man, this is just, I don't have a shot, which is really nice to feel, because I'll tell you, up until recently with this new core box and the addition of the other Winter Guard characters, that's how I felt with Winter Guard for a lot of matchups.
Yeah, they had no depth.
Exactly. Exactly. Go figure it. When you only have four characters in an affiliation, it makes roster building and squad building really difficult.
Two of them are like slow movers.
Exactly. Yeah, two of them were slow movers. It was bad. Now with the depth of Wintergaard, you actually have a little bit of say, and it's really nice. It's been very freeing for me as a player personally that I don't just feel stuck. Like we said toward the beginning of the cast, I still think that Wintergaard in not the most pristine place. I'm hoping to show that Wintergaard actually are in that kind of mid-tier level of the affiliation. That's my hope to run this roster, is to show, hey, don't sleep on Wintergaard, are actually playable now. And I think with a good pilot can actually do pretty well. We've seen that with a couple of events, right?
Yeah, so Second Wind had a Wintergaard player finish 5-1 in the top 8.
And so what I'm trying to help show for folks is to recognize there's a way to construct Wintergaard where it doesn't just have to be, you have to be on God tier level good, you know, of a good player, which that guy, his name is escaping me off the top of my head, but it was one of the better players in that area. So being able to do that with some consistency, I think that people can pick up the two boxes of Wintergaard. And if you got the two core boxes, you're all set. Said, and you can add in an Omega Red later if you want it, if you're enjoying the affiliation. But I think now's the time. If you're curious about some Slav love, check us out now, right? Hey, man, we Slavs, we're pretty awesome people. I don't know if you know that, but well, I know Mike knows that because he hangs out with me all the time as a Slav, and I represent some Slav love. But I tell you what, it is actively fun playing with Wintergaard right now. I'm having a good time, and I can't say that I was before this update. So I'm really stoked with where Wintergaard are right now.
Yeah, that's really exciting because I think most factions right now feel definitely mid-tier to playable, except for maybe Sentinels.
Yeah, poor Sentinels, yeah. Rip in peace, Sentinels, yeah. Maybe they'll get a glow-up like Wintergaard.
All right, so before we close it out, who is your most wanted MCP character that's not in the game yet?
I mean, like, Perun, Chernabog are, like, pretty. I want some more Wintergaard love. There are... So the main one that I actually would, like, die over for right now is the Black Knight.
Oh, Dane Whitman.
Dane Whitman, my man. I love me some Black Knight. He is just one of my favorite characters in Marvel. I think they could do like a really cool affiliation of like mythical, like Dane Whitman with Excalibur, right? So like Captain Britain, we have Psylocke already. Nightcrawler's coming out, right? So they...
Yep, Shadowcat as well.
Right, yeah, Shadowcat is a part of Excalibur. Yeah, so we've got a lot of that there. But you can also, like, Hercules joins with the Black Knight for a while too. So, like, they do this cool Thor, Hercules, Black Knight run. I can't remember the name. It was freaking just awesome having these Arthurian mythology with, like, Merlin, with the Greek gods and Asgardian Norse gods.
Doesn't Black Knight also have, like, a mechanical flying horse or something like that?
Well, he did have a Pegasus that kept dying. Yeah, well, so he kept getting the Pegasus murdered.
Okay, man, that's what I'm thinking of then.
Yes, and the Valkyries were not happy about it, so they gave him a mechanical one and helped him, like, learn how to rebuild it, because Whitman is not the best Black Knight of all the Black Knights who have had the moniker. So he's also just a fun character, and Jon Snow played him for the 2 seconds he was in the...
Yeah, Kit Harington plays him, and he's in the Eternals movie.
Eternals, yeah. Yeah, they spoiled him in Eternals. So that's the other one. My other one is, I know you asked for one and you're getting it like 7. Too bad. Is the Wrecking Crew. I'll tell you what, man. I just want to go up against a Malekith player and slap them with a magical crowbar. Tell me that's not the most best thing that you've ever heard of. If you're not familiar with the Wrecking Crew, they're D-list villains that started as a Thor of villain. They're just a construction crew, like just mobster construction crew guys that found magical construction weapons.
They're also a joke in like the She-Hulk show. Don't they? They just like show up and try to beat up She-Hulk and she's just like, no.
Yep. Yeah. They just show up that like just for the brief. I think the whole crew gets beat up by it, but then I think Thunderball shows up in like the therapy session with like Abomination and some of the other like D-list villains. Yeah. That's my hope and dream there, Mike, is just to slap somebody with a magical crowbar.
Those are great choices, man. I think Wintergaard, I think Wrecking Crew would be really fun in this game.
I just want, what's his name? The Juggernaut version. I think it's Crusher. I want a three threat Juggernaut. That's what I want.
Wait, you're talking about in Wrecking Crew?
In Wrecking Crew, yeah.
It's a Bulldozer.
Bulldozer, that's what his name is, yeah. Yeah, so I want Bulldozer to be a three threat Juggernaut who can only run through size one terrain.
Yeah, so we could just play Bulldozer, Rhino, and Juggernaut.
Yep, that's what I want. That's exactly what I want.
Dude, that would be super fun, playing Wrecking Crew with like Brotherhood characters.
Right? Rhino. Right, Rhino, Juggernaut, yeah. I mean, we're just living the dream right now. I call dibs that when Wrecking Crew get announced, I call dibs. I got to get on the cast to come in and just talk about the shenanigans. Love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then Sploosh wants to know if you are heroes or villains.
Am I here and just overall?
What is your, if just snap judgment, like what is your affinity towards?
Oh, I'm a good guy. A good guy Slav all day. Good guy all day, yeah. I've always just been my fantasy, like when you play like RPG games or stuff like that, I want to be the hero, right? And I'll tell you, like the Winter Guard, what I love about the Winter Guard is how Marvel has changed them through the years. During the Cold War, they were the oogie boogie bad guys, right? The Slavic or the communist Avengers who were just like villains, the bad guys, Radioactive Man, Titanium Man, some, you know, like Iron Man villains were a part of the Winter Guard. Now, since the fall of the Iron Curtain, Marvel has really gone out of their way to paint the Winter Guard, besides Red Widow, she's just a straight up baddie, but as the good guys. They're good Slavic heroes. And I think they're really cool. And I really like that attention to detail of, especially with some of the socio-political stuff that's happening in the world, to have good Slavic representation as heroes, right? That are not caught up in the shenanigans of the Eastern Bloc and some of the things that have happened historically. I think it's just really neat to have characters that's not just like Colossus, who's probably one of the most famous Slavic Marvel characters, right? I can't think of someone more famous than Colossus as like.
Yeah, it's important for media to paint, to add some nuance to cultures, and that they are not all bad or evil or whatever when their leadership does evil things.
Thank you for naming that. Yeah, I know this, Mike, but for the listeners, I'm a third generation Ukrainian. So my Slavic heritage is very important to me, and having that representation of like, hey, not all Slavs are bad guys, right? Now, a lot of us do wear Adidas, so that stereotype is correct. I can't help myself, man. Adidas is just baller. So anyways, but to have that representation is really important to me. And so that's why I got all jazzed up when the Winter Guard first came out. And since the rework, have been playing them pretty nonstop and trying to figure it out and make them work. So it's pretty awesome to see that. And Marvel does a really good job of representing them in the comics. And so I think AMG is doing a pretty good job. I'm sure the next rework coming around, we'll see some love for Winter Guard. At least I hope. I say I'm sure. I'm hopeful.
Just to clarify, neither of us know if there is any errata or character changes on the horizon.
Correct. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Let's put a little asterisk. I am hopeful. I'm hopeful that if/when that some of the Winter Guard characters get some love. Yeah.
Awesome. And then lastly, you should shout out where people can find you.
Yeah, you can find me. I am on the Shatterpoint podcast on the Gamers Guild. So you can find me there. It's really wonderful to talk about another game that I'm really bad at. So you can listen to our hot takes, the Gamers Guild Shatterpoint cast. You can also find me on Game Store Guardians, that podcast where a couple of Jersey boys invite me as the New Yorker guy to come in and help balance the crew, which is really cool. And those are the two places that you can find me on podcasts. I'm on almost every MCP Discord that you can imagine. Mike can tell you there's like 1,500 Discords. So I'm pretty much on all of those and occasionally show up as a guest on some of the best podcasts like The Danger Room. So I'm around. I'm a pitch hitter.
You also have your YouTube page, right?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. My wife and I occasionally upload videos to our YouTube page called the Married Couple Protocol. We've taken a little bit of break because some of our recording stuff has not survive some of the moving that we've done. So we're hoping for Christmas after we can resettle and get some new recording things moving and shaking for us. So we've got some old battle reports on there with the hopeful anticipation that we'll get some in the new year as well. And actually, you'll be able to find my wife on some podcasts in the Discords as well too, who is Sweet Tea Coffee, or better known as Alyssa, the best person ever, because she paints and builds almost all my models. So I'm married up, man.
You love to see it.
Yeah, look, go figure. If you can't do nothing right, just marry up. That's what I did. We live the dream. But yeah, thanks for having me on, Mike. It was a great time.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on, Ben. And listeners, goodbye and see you in the next one.
Bye.